the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. I'm going to be doing this solo. Joey's not here. I'm Len. And thank you for tuning in because this is going to be a dynamite show. We have Nick coming on. We haven't talked to him for a little bit of time. It's been about a year and a half, I think, since we've last had him on the show. I'm giving around there. But anyways, before we dive deep into what's going on with Nick, I just got a couple of things I got to take care of. Number one, the show is sponsored by a pair of companies. First one, EasyDNS. And it's a good place to, if you need web hosting, email hosting, domain name services. You could even get Nipple 5 on there. So if you're a Nostr fan, they're also available with that. They also provide services with that. They used to provide relay services. If you used to use their relay, talk to them. They will whitelist you and you're good to go. But they're getting out of that because of all the spam. But if you do want to take advantage of the services they have, use the code CBPMedia. By doing so, you're going to get 50% off your initial purchase. Not only that, you could also buy with or pay with Bitcoin. What better else could you get out of there? That's just a great company providing great services for people that need web hosting and little likes. Our second sponsor is Bull Bitcoin. And Bull, well, there's a lot going on over there. And if you use our code below to sign up, you're going to get a free $20 added to your account and KYC free Bitcoin. You can live on the Bitcoin standard. You could pay your bills with Bitcoin. You could buy gift cards with Bitcoin. You could buy and sell your Bitcoin if you wanted. Who the heck wants to sell Bitcoin? Not me. I'm always trying to stack some more. But the KYC, that's really the most important thing. Plus, they are, well, they have recently introduced a brand new app. It's going to be a killer app, only available right now on APK format. So you can only get it on your Android device, soon to be available on the app and Play Store. So you could get it through the proper channels. Once that it's available, I hope everybody takes advantage of it because then you could have your cold card connected to it and you could easily just seamlessly buy Bitcoin and have it end up on your hardware wallet. Man, this thing is going to be dynamite. It's going to have Lightning implementation as well. It's going to be awesome. But yeah, check it out. Use our code below and you'll be golden. But with that, let's bring on the man of the hour because, well, Nick Caribou on Nostr, Nobody Caribou on Twitter, Bitcoin Stoa on YouTube. You get a lot of different aliases. And I don't know. I'm just going to call you Nick for the remainder of the show, if that's okay. Nick, how are you?
I'm good, Len. Thanks for having me on.
My friend, it's a pleasure to have you on the show once again. It's been a while. I don't think you've been on the show since, I'm guessing, 2021. That's my guess. And the same, likewise, we haven't been on your show for since around that time. So, you know, there's been a lot going on. You've been traveling, have you not?
I did travel a bit at the start of this year. Yeah.
You know what? Let's go on. What's going on with you? Because people that haven't really heard from you in the past little while may want to know what's going on in the life of Nick. And maybe you could give an update as to what's going on with you.
I'm basically just trying to soak in and savor life and orange pill and green pill as many people as I can. That is like my game. And winning means giving out a lot of green and orange pills. And in order to do that, you have to understand Bitcoin and you have to understand health. And both of those things are my real interests aside from, you know, aside from taking care of myself and spending time with my family. I just want to learn as much as I can about Bitcoin, be as healthy as I can, and hand out as many orange or green pills as I can.
No, perfect. Now, the orange peeling, where have you been doing that? Because if you're doing it abroad, I'd love to know where you've been.
Yeah, I would say soft orange peeling wasn't like my primary sort of mission as I was traveling, but I was in Spain and France for a bit. And then I went down to Nicaragua. And in each of those places, you see different use cases for Bitcoin, right? So I was in, when I was in France, there was this little fishing village that we were staying in on the coast. And fishermen would come in the morning. They would go out really early morning. They would come into the small harbor, and they would literally take the fish off the back of their boats, dress them right there in the port. And people at the restaurants that were along the port would go out and buy the fish to serve to their customers. And people from the town would come and buy their fish. And they're all using shit coins. They're all using euros to sell their catch, which is, you know, like going out on a boat, fishing, spending like hours in the morning before people even wake up, catching food is legit proof of work. And just, it always astounded me like how crazy it is that people are willing to trade their time and energy for these pieces of paper that get diluted constantly. And it's like, it's not a mystery. This is known. And so, yeah, with those guys or with people in the farmer's market that they had there, it's like if they had Bitcoin, they would have just made peer-to-peer value transfer so much easier. Cause like some people have these terminal, these machines that they charged people's credit cards with or bank cards. And for some of them, like they didn't work very well. And for everyone else, they were paying, you know, 300 basis points to a giant company just to allow them to receive value from somewhere else. And they only speak French there, and I don't speak French that tightly. So I do speak French, but like explaining Bitcoin or trying to bring up Bitcoin in a conversation is hard enough. But when you try and do it in a language you don't even know very well, it's like, that's a serious challenge. So I had a few good conversations. I often ask people, actually, I went on a, when we were in Nicaragua, I went for a horseback ride. And at the end, I asked the girl, I'm like, can I tip you in Bitcoin? And she's like, well, I don't really know. I don't know what Bitcoin is, but if you want to tip me in it and you could show me how to receive it, then I will gladly take that. So that was a good little orange pill. Get her down the wallet of Satoshi. Super. It, yes, it's custodial, but let's be real. I was just trying to show her the magic of the magic internet money that most people don't know about. And so, yeah, I left a little bit of like a sat trail wherever I traveled. I tried to do it at least a couple times in each different spot. And yeah, it's so interesting how when you start to use Bitcoin in your life and really like learn about it, you end up seeing so many examples of the concepts related to Bitcoin. Like in this place in France, the architecture and the quality of the homes that they built were so, it was like sound money ushered in beauty and architecture and like low time preference architecture, like building things to last forever, castles to last forever, homes to last forever. And it just got me really excited for the return of the age of beauty when we start to have, on top of sound money, we're going to make beautiful things again. And yeah, super stoked for that.
Yeah. And a fiat architecture, certainly it's taking a toll on society, at least the way cities are looking these days. Like even I was in Toronto this past weekend for the Canadian Bitcoin conference. And you look at the Toronto's old city hall and it just looks absolutely magnificent from the outside. And adjacent to it is Toronto's new city hall. And you look at the two and the old one just is so much more aesthetically pleasing. But you know what? I don't know what it's like on the inside. So it's easy for me to say through the lens of just walking on the streets and looking at it like that. So, but it's too bad we don't have more buildings like that. But I want to double back to something you've mentioned. You mentioned orange pilling. We know what that's all about. What is green pilling?
Yeah, so if orange pilling is helping people understand Bitcoin, green pilling is helping people understand health. And I call it green pilling because I think the world around us, like nature, is a decentralized health network. And when we unplug from her, we get really diseased, right? When we stop eating food that comes directly from her, when we stop spending time with ourselves, when we stop spending time in nature or with other people, we just, you know, like the natural, if you're not exposed to artificial light in the day and you just see sunlight and really low light intensity, you sleep like a fucking baby. If you move all day, you sleep really well. And so, you know, like when we do that, when we take away all this artificial shit that we've designed that's screwing us up in terms of our health and we're left with a more natural way of living, the result is health. So I think green pilling is helping people understand health, not just understanding it, but actually understanding how to apply principles that they're learning in their lives, right? It's not, health is not really rocket science, but people have a hard time applying healthy habits in their lives within the context of a fiat world. Like the fiat world makes it insanely difficult to be healthy. It's like, basically you got to swim upstream all the time. But I think in a, you know, I often think of how Bitcoin, I thought I had low time preference in my life. Bitcoin is just hacking away at my time preference incessantly. Like I notice things that are just changing where I'm like, wow, I thought I was good there. And clearly I was thinking more short-sighted or not really zooming out enough. And I think, you know, where your money goes, your mind follows, and the money you use colors how you view the world. I think a lot of Bitcoiners would agree that that can be the case. And when you switch from high time preference fiat money to low time preference money, you start to color your entire world through a lower time preference. And I think health is fundamentally a low time preference endeavor. It takes a lot of time, patience, dedication, work. So yeah, the key is just to enjoy the process. But I think a lot of people aren't healthy because they misunderstand health, not because they're not putting energy into trying to be healthy. They're just not doing the right things. So green pilling is really just helping people understand that when you start to shave away the bullshit, the default is health. You don't actually have to do anything extra. You just have to subtract away all the bullshit that you've accumulated that is taking away from your natural state of health. So yeah, that's the green pill.
So the places you've been, Spain, France, Nicaragua, green pilling, it's probably very easy to have to administer in those areas because of just the lifestyle that they live. And yeah, I'm curious to hear, like, what are your stories over there with trying to green pill people that are not on board, but even orange pilling people that are getting, you know, more accustomed to Bitcoin or learning about Bitcoin, because you are an ambassador to Bitcoin when you're traveling. So I want to hear some of these stories.
Yeah, and I always make sure to have something that says Bitcoin on it, on me. I think the visual, the idea that the more people see that beautiful symbol of the bee, the more it ingrains this meme of Bitcoin in their mind and maybe like subconsciously makes them more curious. So my PSYOP is to put the Bitcoin logo everywhere I can, try and spread the virus visually. I think in those countries, they're much more green-pilled than we are in the like developed high-tech Western world. Like in Nicaragua, they have very little and they're very healthy because they live in nature. Like literally people live in shacks that look like they would blow away if there was a windstorm, mud floors, water from the ground, food from the environment. Like they already have the green pill. Like they're on a steady dose of green pills. In Europe, they live a slower pace of life, which I think is more conducive to the green pill compared to like the fast, always doing, always on Western world. You know, like people will literally go out for a 2-hour lunch. They'll sit down, they'll have a nice meal. They're not glued to their phones. So that was kind of, and obviously it depends where you go, what you're going to see, but in the place that we were, at least it seemed to be the case that it was that way. And then where we were in Spain was very active. There were a lot of people, there were like a lot of parks, a lot of beautiful parks, and like old remnants of castles. That was in Valencia. So yeah, I mean, I don't try and convince anyone of anything these days. I more try and just identify opportunities where it's like, here's a friction point related to the shittiness of fiat money. Maybe I should, you know, bring up Bitcoin. Or, you know, the other day, I went to pick up this raw dog food, and right beside it, there's a pizza place. And last time I went there, I saw this big sign. It said, "We sell Bitcoin," right in front of the pizza place. And I was like, wow, this is very interesting. I walk in, I ask them about it, and they're like, yeah, we sell it out of this thing. We don't really know how to use it, but, and so they didn't really get it. And I was like, all right, well, can I pay for a slice in Bitcoin? Like I want to pay for a slice of pizza. I'm not even hungry right now, but I just want to do it so that I can see the experience. They're like, oh, you can't pay for things in Bitcoin. I was like, wait, you're selling this and you won't even accept it as payment? We need to change that. Next time I'm here, I'll come and we'll just have a little chat. Anyway, they were super stoked. So I recently went back. This was about 6 weeks later. And, I go get the raw dog food, and then I go next door to the pizza place or whatever. And the guy gets me a slice of pizza, and I say, can I tip you in Bitcoin? And the guy says, well, I don't really know how to use Bitcoin. We sell it, but I don't really know what to do. And then the guy I had originally talked about came out the back and said, hey, Nick, like you remember. And this was like 6 weeks ago, random encounter. So he comes out, we start talking, same thing. I get him to download Wallet Satoshi. I sent him, I love sending people 21 sats. And I love saying, it's not a lot of money right now. It's a fraction of a cent, but that could be worth $21 one day. And I firmly believe it will. I don't know what we'll be paying for a slice of pizza at that point, Canadian dollars, maybe like $250,000. I have no fucking idea. I guess it depends how long you look out. And anyway, I was explaining to the guy, and there's a lot of aha moments and light bulbs. And then there was this really young girl that was working there. Like, she was just like a high school student working a part-time job. She goes, "What is Bitcoin?" And I was like, "Oh, that's always a juicy one to receive, because like you can hit that back a lot of different ways." My favorite way to send that one back is, "What is money?" Just ask them plainly, "What is money?" And anyway, we kind of have this conversation, and I'm trying to like lead her down a path to realizing that money is how you represent your time. So I'm asking her, like, "Why are you here?" And you know, she gives all these answers, but in the end, she says, I'm here because I need to work." And I'm like, "Why do you work? To make money. What is money? It's what I get paid. It's a currency. But what does it represent?" And she said, "My time." Mm-hmm. So she found that she ended up getting to the end of that path pretty quick. And I was like, "Exactly. Money is a tool we use to represent our time. You give your time to someone, and in return, they give you money, which is essentially your time etched into this tool that you can then use at a later time, right? Like, you can go pay for a TV and say, I'm going to pay you 50 hours of my time or whatever you make for this TV. That's the tool that's what money represents." And then I kind of said, "Yes. Now, if you use Canadian dollars, that tool you're using to store your time can be manipulated. And when people make way more of it, they're basically saying your time is worth less now, right? We're going to steal some of your time by making more of these units, which we can create out of thin air." And you kind of see the light bulbs go off. And then I'm like, "That's what inflation is, right? Inflation is, they say we try and do 2% inflation. What they're really saying is, we're going to aim for 2% theft of everyone's time this year." And once they sort of, and I had, at the end of all that, you know, they're kind of like simmering on it. They're marveling over how, like, in 1 second, I sent him 21 sats. No one could stop it. No one knew that happened. No one can take it from him. And at the end, the one older guy that kind of came out sort of had this look that, like, he had never understood what inflation was until that point. And I think it was a really nice illustration of the fact that most people have no idea what is happening to the money. Most people have no idea that the reason prices are going up in a world where technology is pushing everything down to be basically free is because people are constantly stealing our time on a mass scale, and none of us are taught that that's the truth. And it just, I don't know, it never ceases to amaze me how many different ways there are of explaining Bitcoin to people by first talking about money, and how few people actually understand the fundamentals of what money even is. They intuitively kind of get it when they go down there. But yeah, I orange pilling stories are just like the favorite thing. Spreading the message of Bitcoin is actually just the most enjoyable game I've ever played, I think. Because you can literally save people's socioeconomic lives in 10 minutes by just having the first domino fall and hoping that there's some curiosity that brings them forward until they realize how much of a scam the system, the central banking system, is. And then maybe that saves them. Maybe that saves their whole family. Maybe that saves like the next five generations of their lineage from slavery. And like, that's pretty meaningful if that's the meaning you take from it. So
yeah, we're living in unprecedented times. It's been decades since we lived under a hard money system. And now with easy money, it's just so easy to create more of it or borrow against it for future generations to deal with existing problems. And it just compounds over time. And that 2% debasement or 2% inflation that they always talk about,
even that's bullshit. It's not even 2%. It's more like 10-7. I think on average, last time I looked at it in Canadian stats, the average is 7%, and it goes up to like 15 or 20. So it's all gaslighting.
Yeah. And I could even go further. You're looking at the two parts of the equation, the numerator and denominator. Both of them are highly variable, because one will be the US dollar and the other one will be what it is they're trying to buy with the US dollar. And nothing remains static. So if you're looking at something and you're trying to price in, say, the price of oil, for instance, month to month, year to year, decade to decade, it itself, the value of oil changes based on supply and demand. And with that would change, that would dictate the price in which you could buy it. So when you're looking at everything with this whole equation to figure out how much something costs or how much things have lost value over time, it's extremely difficult to actually figure out what is the number. It's actually, I would say, it's, dare I say, impossible. So it gives an opportunity for manipulation, because it's going to be very difficult to say you guys got it wrong. They're the ones providing the statistics. And when they want to say it's 2% and you know, they say maybe 2%. You said it's much, much higher in reality. It's hard to notice until you take a step back. Year to year, sometimes it's maybe difficult to notice, but we take a look at, say, over a 5 to 10 year period of time. It's like, wow, this car I bought now is significantly more expensive than I could have bought it, say, 10 years ago, or my computer or anything else is significantly more expensive. So what I'm trying to get at is, in countries like Western Europe, you've been to Spain, you've been to France, and you've been in Central America, Nicaragua. It's very much noticeable. I would say more so Nicaragua, the inflation that the U.S. is exporting to there. It is very much impacting the people's lives. Have you noticed it? Have been people talking about how inflation is wrecking the common citizen over there? Or are they just taking it in stride and they just, you know, there's nothing they could do?
I don't think they really know what's happening. I don't think the average person actually understands or even cares to understand about how the plumbing works of the money system. Yeah, in a fiat world where everything is chaos, it's like, I heard Robert Breedlove say this the other day, and I think it really resonated. It's like manipulating the money constantly is like constantly manipulating the language. And if you manipulate the language, no one's gonna be able to talk. When you can't talk, life gets harder because you can't rely on others for trade. You can no longer trade with someone who does something that you don't. And so you're constantly like, am I going to be able to get this? You know, if the prices go up, I can't do much about it because I don't know how to make it myself. And so it basically makes us all, you know, this world has us all very dependent on each other because of how integrated the web has become. And most people are literally just trying to survive the chaos of a fiat world, right? It's like the fiat world creates a shitstorm of chaos that is coming to an accelerating rate, being more chaotic. People are literally just trying not to drown. And to try and get them to really understand it, the root cause of what is creating all this is like telling a person who's drowning to get on the shore and read this book. It's like, dude, I'm just trying not to drown right now. Like I got bigger concerns. So I think most people just don't have the bandwidth or really any, they haven't experienced enough pain to have a problem worth looking into. That's like what I kind of constantly get down to. They just don't know what's going on. Most people have no interest to learn what's going on until they experience enough pain. And you know, in Nicaragua, I mean, people constantly talk about prices going up. Like the other day I was buying a sandwich at this place near where I live and they make everything from scratch. And he was just saying how insane it is that prices are, some things, random things that he gets are like double, triple the price now. And he's like, I've never seen this before. This is insane. Like this, I have to make my things a lot more expensive and people are complaining to me about prices, but the things I'm buying are going up by a higher multiple than what I'm increasing my prices by. So everyone's just kind of like pissed and they don't know where to aim the anger. They think it's the people who are buying the sandwich think it's the guy who's making the sandwich. The guy who's making the sandwich thinks it's the people who supply the foods. The people who supply the foods thinks it's the people who supply the commodities. All these things are derivatives of politicians stealing our money and then people not understanding things well enough to know who to, you know, really look to and be like, this is enough. This is unacceptable. Yeah, I mean, people in Nicaragua live a very simple life. I think they can benefit greatly from Bitcoin because it's the one, you know, their Cordoba is constantly just being pegged down from the US dollar, and the US dollar itself is losing value as a whole. So, like, they're just getting kind of obliterated. It's 36 cords for one US dollar when we were down there, at least. So, they're already just getting so manipulated that, like, I don't know. You know, for them, one thing I caught on to, and we were kind of like off grid for our trip, is that when you get things from a farmer who is doing the actual growing of the food, the input of that farmer, the primary input, is actually just labor. And labor, you know, doesn't see, when you have like small circular economies that are really just pricing things off of their labor and whatever they need to get things that to survive that they can't do themselves, it doesn't actually, they don't get affected that much, right? Most of them, like literally most of them use a horse. So when you don't use a car, you don't care how much fuel prices are, right? The price of grass is not that variable from day to day, right? It's like Mother Nature makes a lot of shit always. So I don't think they see as much of it because I think they're more reliant on community, like small closed networks of people helping people, which is like the OG way that humans did it, right? Obviously, money allows us to coordinate at a much bigger scale. But if you use manipulated money, then it kind of might do more damage than good in the long run. And being reliant on your community might end up being something that's very important in the future if you don't have Bitcoin. So,
do you think that they'll ever be able to be in a position where they can stack Bitcoin? Or is it only going to be transactional just because of the fact that incomes are relatively low in comparison to rich Western nations? And so you're almost living hand to mouth. So is it going to be just a transactional situation if ever Bitcoin is introduced and adopted in a country like Nicaragua?
I mean, I think it's in their best interest to stack. They don't have to be big stackers, right? Like they can stack like little mini stacks, and that can actually result in generational, like where for them, a really competitive, like a really good salary that a lot of Nicaraguans strive towards. Cause I asked our drivers, like we had to take a 2-hour car ride from the airport to where we were staying. So I just started firing all these questions at the driver. Like first of all, I was like, do you take Bitcoin? Do you accept Bitcoin tips? Is Bitcoin a thing here? Have you ever heard that word? Do you know what it is? Mm-hmm. And I just asked him all these questions, and he said a salary that a lot of Nicaraguans strive towards is like $300 US per month is like a really, so 10 bucks a day is like a really great salary. You have a good life. You know, you can get all the things you need. You're doing pretty good. And so, you know, for someone there, it's like if they saved $10 a month and if they stacked $10 US worth of sats per month, that could be something giant for them in future, right? Because their cost of living is not going to be blasting up super high. Like I said, a lot of them are self-reliant on their own kind of community, right? Like you walk down the street, you get milk from the dude who has cows and milks those cows. Price of milk isn't going up because that dude's price of labor isn't going up and the grass isn't getting more expensive. So yeah, I think as a store of value, it's not any less important for them. I think sometimes we sort of make the assumption that for them to stack, they got to be stacking like we're stacking in the Western world, where maybe we have more disposable income than them, but a small stack for them can be equally impactful as a big stack for the average person in North America. So yeah, I think when they get it, when there's enough pain, you know, when someone from the community, there's actually a lot of Canadians that go down to where we were in Nicaragua. There's actually way more Canadians than Americans, ironically.
Wow.
All it takes is like one Canadian to go down there and start to orange pill all the places in the downtown area of Playa del Sur. And it just kind of leaks out, right? Word of mouth gets out. One person talks to another person. They get interested. Then they tell 10 people. Then, you know, it just kind of like goes out from there. But I think there's still a little bit of time. There's a little bit of time and more pain until people really have a reason to want to learn about it. Because right now it's like, why would I learn about something that I have no reason necessarily, no immediate reason to learn about it, right? You either learn about Bitcoin through curiosity or pain. Most people just aren't that curious about how money works because it's just like a thing that's in their life because it has to be, not because they want it to be. And, but, you know, every 5 years I want to go back down there and just see if things have kind of popped off and bring some orange pills with me.
Let's hope things improve. And got a question from the audience. You speak Spanish?
Not well.
You have an opportunity to improve on it. Let's talk about a little bit more domestic now before we go into something which made you rather famous in the Bitcoin community. Give a shout out to that pizza company, that pizza place in
Milano's in Manitic, selling Bitcoin. Love it.
Awesome. And the raw dog food. I briefly want to just touch on this. I've never heard of this before. We feed our dog just, you know, stuff we pick up at the store. What is the raw dog food? What is it?
It's literally just meat. It's like ground.
That's all it is.
Meat. It's all like, it's meat that, you know, maybe didn't make the cut literally, for human consumption, like all the little bits that humans don't like to eat or all the cuts that we don't like. Ground up bones. So it's literally just these, like, they literally look like hockey pucks. So you buy frozen pucks of food. Each one is a half pound, depending on the size of your dog. You feed them whatever. I have a big dog, so he eats 2 pounds of that a day.
His name?
His name's Deuce.
Deuce.
Yeah, he looks like a wolf. He's a 4-year-old, half husky shepherd, half Samoy, and loves it.
Very
and,
active.
You know, just I look at it like raw dog food is a low time preference alternative to more fiat kibble. And the way I look at it is I'm paying more for food each month, but I'm paying way less in vet bills. eventually. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, it's kind of like with human health, it's like you can eat cheap food for a long time, but when you get sick, it actually ends up being a really expensive choice to make to eat cheap food every day. So yeah, that's raw dog food. Well, it's hard to find. It's hard to find for like a decent price and good quality. Like the one we get literally has no seed oils in it, which is like seed oils have weaseled their way into every single food thing on planet Earth for every species, it seems.
Give a plug for that, the place where you buy it from, just in case anybody wants to get it where you are getting it from.
Ooh, Everything Raw, I think it's called. Everything Raw. They're in Manitic. That's like a small place near Ottawa, Canada. But everythingraw.com, I think, is the name. And the thing is, it has to be frozen. Like, it's frozen until you put it in the fridge. So I don't think they ship very far, if anything, because it's just really hard to keep meat cool. But they definitely have the best price. They're like 30% cheaper than anywhere else for the caliber of food that they make. So, yep.
Okay, let's dive into something which happened last year that made you relatively famous in the Bitcoin community. And a lot of people they had eyes on you given what has transpired in the few weeks that, which took place in Ottawa. Talk about the whole situation, like the magic behind it and the experience you had and the orange peeling you've done over there. And like, this is the first time you've been on our show since that has all transpired. So, you know, the floor is yours. You could talk about whatever you want to do with it, because a lot of people are probably wondering what it's like from your eyes, and maybe you could just tell your side of the story. What happened over there?
Yeah, a lot happened.
Mm-hmm.
Things are still happening for me, so I have to be careful what I talk about. But it was definitely one of the highlights of my entire life, just being part of it, witnessing it, observing like the just perseverance of people who were there to claim their freedom. Basically, it's like the ironically the only free place in Canada, the only safe free place in Canada during the Freedom Convoy was downtown Ottawa, because you were protected by all these other people who were there for the same reason, who valued their freedom, who were respectful, who were kind, who were generous, who were loving, who were happy to be around other people that shared their values and shared what they stood for. And they were happy to actually have some agency in their life, where it's like they showed up there because they, as their vote, the only vote that actually mattered was to show up there and say, enough is enough. You can't continue to coerce everyone in this country to take a medical procedure, which includes an amount of risk. If there's risk, there must be a choice. That's it. And you must give people... I come from a health professional background. I understand what informed consent is, because I had to learn a shitload about what is informed consent, what goes into actually making sure that you're getting someone, that you're giving someone the right information for them to consent to something from a standpoint of being able to weigh the truthful pros and cons of whatever you're suggesting. Right? They need to know the risks. They need to know the benefits. They need to be told the truth about that so they can make a good decision. And then and only then can they say yes to something, and they must not be coerced. And people showed up from everywhere in Canada to say enough is enough. And we're here to basically say this stops now. And we're here to claim our sovereignty as free Canadians. And so just seeing that, and literally just engaging with people and hearing their story, it's like, you know, people would be from everywhere, from Victoria on the West Coast, all the way to Prince Edward Island on the East Coast, all Canada wide. And oftentimes I would kind of meet these people and say, you know, what's your name? Where are you from? Why are you here? And they all had different, slightly different reasons. A lot of them have personal stories where someone that they knew was affected by this procedure that everyone was coerced into doing. They were scared for their life to keep their job, to get this thing. And this thing ended up harming them in a big way. And they didn't actually know the risks when they went into it and said yes to it. And so they had personal stories with that, where they're like, I'm here on behalf of this person who had this issue because of something our government did. This is how I show up to basically say, this is unacceptable. This has to stop. And yeah, it was just really inspiring to hear everyone's different stories. And I think one of the coolest things, like early on, I was like, well, I live in Ottawa, so I may as well help in some way. So step one is like, how can I actually help? Like, what is there to be done that's not being done that I can do well? And so the first step was like, just go talk to a bunch of people. Like, what do you, like, literally knock on a truck driver's door and say, hey, is there anything you need? I learned pretty quickly that truck drivers are very resourceful and will never they never need anything because they just have all the shit that they need at all times. This is what they do for their work. So I quickly asked to not say, do you need anything? It's when you are going to need something, what's the first thing you're going to need? And then you get some interesting answers. You know, they would say, you know, I need a pack of cigarettes, or a nice pair of socks would be really nice, or a toque would be nice, or a book would be nice. You know, they would say these random things, and I would just go on a mission. It's like, you know, one guy that said it was nice, be nice to have a pair of socks. I walked to the shopping mall. I bought like a pack of CCM socks from a sports store. I brought them to him, and I brought them to some other truckers. Some of them cried when I brought them socks. Like literally, this is how magical the connection was, where you can meet a total stranger, ask what they need, help them by bringing them something, because they're there holding down the fort in their truck, saying hi to all the little kids and the grandmas and the people who are coming by, waving at them, giving them cards, giving them cookies that they baked in the morning, giving them cash in their window, a lot of cash, a lot like cash was the OG peer-to-peer method to transfer value within this whole thing. There were cash donation areas. People would literally give cash or literally send an e-transfer from their phone to the trucker. So the peer-to-peer method, just human to human, was actually like really effective. The only one that crowdfunded things and actually transmitted that value to the truckers was Bitcoin, which I think was a really monumental thing, really, when you think about it. But one of the coolest things I saw was, like I said, I wanted to help. I had to learn what I could do to help. I started asking around, started finding my way to the people who were kind of coordinating things. And these people weren't there like saying, I'm going to coordinate fuel distribution. They just went there and found a role that they could do. And, you know, some of the truckers knew their contact info. It's like, yeah, for fuel, we contact Greg. He sends out a crew if we need fuel. And like, I started witnessing all these like little emergent systems that were evolving. It's like everything that needed to be done was being to be done. No one was telling anyone what to do. I found it super fascinating. It made it very hard to know what I could do because everything, you know, I had to really find a hole. By the time I solved the problem, someone had already solved it. Like at one point, these truckers were like, hey, it would be really nice to have toilets close by because we got to walk in minus 30 all the way there. Those are the porta potties. Half the time they're too full. We can't really use them. So I would call around to a bunch of porta potty companies. They'd be like, yeah, the city of Ottawa blacklisted us. They won't even let us bring porta potties in. The city stopped toilet companies from bringing toilets to the truckers, even though it was keeping their city clean. Like it was totally, totally fucked up how much the police and the city created headaches for truckers just to be there, just to like be there, be respectful, keep things clean, to the point where truckers were literally organizing their own garbage collection systems within downtown because the city stopped collecting garbage. So truckers took it upon themselves to coordinate this. People would go around, do garbage cleanups. We would put it in these big areas. People would come by with four by fours, quads with trailers. They would bring the garbage to an outside lot. Someone would put it in their truck, bring it. Like it was so incredible to see all this coordination happening. No one's really telling anyone what to do. People are organizing food distribution, whether it's like a community kitchen set up in a certain area or there was a giant flatbed truck. People would bring donations. Four or five different people from different parts of the country that were sleeping in their cars would facilitate spreading out all the donations from this one truck to all the different truck drivers, make sure everyone had what they needed. Like it was really cool to see this human organism, this decentralized self-organizing organism that happened to make sure everyone was okay. And I think that really inspired me to be like, wow, humans are master problem solvers. When we're all on the same page and we're all aligned with what we're trying to accomplish, we are incredibly resourceful, incredibly smart. And yeah, it was, I don't think I've ever been around that many inspiring people that were claiming their freedom. And that I knew everyone that I saw there, I knew aligned with me, almost everyone, with on so many levels. Like it didn't matter if you had taken this medical procedure or not. It didn't matter. It wasn't about that. It was about like, you are free to decide what you want. We are here to claim our freedom and protect ourselves and our families. Let's make sure everyone's okay. That was literally convoy boiled down into like the essence of what I witnessed, at least.
That's awesome. Now there's a question from the audience. I'm not sure if you're able to answer this, but I'll ask you, and just if you're not, just tell me, are you allowed to tell us if you keep in touch with any of the truckers?
I haven't kept in touch with any of the truckers.
Okay. Gotcha.
Mostly for our mutual protection, but I think in future, we will see documentaries that talk to all the truckers.
Okay. And again, another question, again, sorry if you can't answer this, okay, from the audience. Curious if they were able to make use of the donations, if it was a good experience or any difficulties they may have trying to figure things out with respect to the Bitcoin.
Yeah, so I don't know. The only actual data metric that we have is when a Bitcoiner created a piece of code that actually tracked how many of the wallets had had a transaction occur on them. And that's if you go through some of the Convoy threads, be able to find that. And it shows that there is a large portion of the wallets that have been interacted with, whether like a transaction has been done. With that said, a lot of the truckers that I talked to like didn't really know what to make of this, right? I literally had probably about 60 seconds, no, maybe a little bit more, 2 to 3 minutes. So like under 200 seconds to basically be a complete stranger, come up with an envelope, tell them what it was, and give them whatever I needed for them to be interested enough to not throw the envelope away. And then I left because it was kind of sketchy walking around with that many envelopes. Mm-hmm. So part of the explanation was, this is what this is. The best way to make use of this is to hold this for a long time because there's something very scarce in here. Over time, scarce things go up in value relative to everything else, and just keep it safe and open it one day if you're ready, if you want to. You know, I got to go, but that's what it is. And so I don't know, but I would imagine that even the ones who haven't touched it, it'll be really cool to see, to look back in 5 years and see how many of them touched their Bitcoin, because I don't know how long some of them, I said, hey, do you have any kids? And one guy had two kids. And I said, I gave a guy two envelopes because he had two kids. I said, okay, you're two young kids now. By the time they get into university, open these envelopes, that might pay for their university. And he didn't really understand what that meant. But my hope is that, I'm just going to, until proven otherwise, I'm going to have the faith that guy believes that, kept that envelope safe, and his kids can do whatever they want when and if they choose to go to school with the scarce digital property that's in that envelope, those envelopes. So
the process at which you undertook to get the envelopes ready, I saw the video you guys posted it, I think on Twitter or YouTube or something like that. It was quite a process. Can you talk about it? Because it is very interesting how it is you presented and created these envelopes in terms of getting equipment, special equipment on site, then destroying it from what I understand. So could you talk about that? Because that video that was being circulated was amazing stuff. And it just goes to show you how safe you guys were with dealing with these funds. So I want to hear about it.
Yeah. I mean, I was just basically a monkey doing what I was told by some really badass Bitcoiners, dude. Like, I don't know my way around command prompt more than I know my way around like a spaceship. It's like, okay, I'm going into this new universe. Tell me exactly what to do because I know nothing about what I'm being asked to do right now. So yeah, we got a script for a send to many Bitcoin transaction where basically like, I don't really know how it works. You just basically send, all I had to do was send a certain amount of funds to a certain, through a certain script in Sparrow, and it basically spat out the funds evenly to 100 different addresses or different paper wallets. And then each paper wallet was put into an envelope and then the envelopes were handed out. So I couldn't really tell you much about the technical part other than it was a really cool, some Bitcoin magic from really cool Bitcoiners who helped, get this thing done in the best possible way under the circumstances we had. And, obviously in hindsight, there's many different ways that it could have been done differently and better. But there's very few, if any, people that really understand the circumstances we were under. And, it was like, what is the least shitty way of doing this? That's what we were left with. It wasn't like, oh, let's deliberate for a couple of days about how best to do this. It was like, this needs to be done now. This seems to be the best option based on all the variables we have. Now we need to commit to this and actually get it done because the execution is actually not that simple. And there are many points along that execution that things could have gone wrong and almost did to stop the whole thing from even happening. Somehow it ended up working out. And it's a pretty, it was a pretty crazy thing, Len. It was like, I didn't really, you know, it's like I accepted a job unintentionally to do something for the most critical and, you know, people with the highest standards in the world for integrity and truth, which is Bitcoiners. And I just did my best to try and act in alignment with the way, you know, a Bitcoiner would want to see things done. And yeah, the whole time there was a couple times where I was just like, okay, if shit goes down, all I can say is I acted with integrity. I did what was right, even if it was harder or if it was more dangerous. And I can sleep pretty good knowing that I did everything I could to do it as best I could. Yeah, I was just honored to be able to be part of it and to see what I saw and help in the way I was able to. It was a blast.
Yeah, it was a lot of technical challenges that had to be overcome. And on Twitter, you had some positive and some negative that I remember at the time it was figuring out how to distribute the funds. People were chiming in, which is the best way to do it. And ultimately, I think the one thing I remember is the printer was destroyed. The computer was destroyed. And it was a phone too, an old phone that was destroyed in the process. Did I get this correct?
Yeah. We actually didn't end up nuking the printer because there wasn't... We didn't end up nuking the printer, but when all of my shit was stolen, they basically said, we're not going to get anything about, we don't have the technology to get anything about out of this printer. And so, yeah, they didn't even take it, but the printer still survives to this day. It didn't have anything to store information. And it's like, there was nothing to get out of it. And then the computer that was used, basically was a full system reboot, hard drive clear, so there was nothing to take there.
Gotcha.
But yeah, the people who were helping me were way more technically advanced than perhaps I ever hoped to be, and I'm very thankful. You know who you are if you're listening to this. Specifically JW Weatherman was like just this really deep, it just has a really deep understanding of Bitcoin security and the implications of how to do things, the security implications, and yeah, was able to kind of guide me along to do something I never would have been able to do alone. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you definitely, and a lot of people would also have needed help in that position. It's not like you were the only one. It was a very difficult position to be in because there was a lot to do, a lot to learn, and a lot to have executed in a very short period of time. So I just want to give you kudos for what you achieved in that that period of time. Now, with respect to what's going on with you, what's next with Nick? Because I'm sure a lot of people are going to be wondering what's happening with you, what's going to happen next, because you're now in Montreal. Are you going to be doing traveling, or what's happening with you going forward?
I'll be hanging out in Montreal for a while. I found someone to play pickleball with, and I play a lot of pickleball now.
I saw that on Nostr. I don't mean to interrupt you. I saw you posted, there's a professional pickleball player. You tweeted, you did something on Nostr, and I sent him some stats. Yeah. I recently too started playing pickleball last year. Great game.
Dope.
I'm an avid tennis player, so another racquetball sport is just par for the course for me. So cool. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. So I play with someone called Obi-Wan Satoshi, who shall remain anonymous, pseudonymous. And it's very challenging, but I love playing. So playing a lot of that, learning about Bitcoin, trying to keep up with all the different news that's happening in the Bitcoin space. And there's been like a flurry of really good podcasts lately that seem to have come off the Miami conference this year. So really enjoying those. Anytime Sailor comes out with a new batch, like a fresh wave of him sharing his thoughts, it's just like overwhelming sometimes how bullish it makes me when I listen to that man talk about Bitcoin and where he sees things going in the future and the utility. And yeah, so really just trying to keep up, take care of myself, play a lot, spread the message of Bitcoin. And that's pretty much it. That's my life. And I'm very happy to live that life in a low time preference way and be super patient. I think that's one thing, is I've become a much more patient person, progressively so, as I've understood Bitcoin and stored my, you know, energy in Bitcoin. It just makes me not stress about a lot of things anymore and just be very patient. It's like not a lot of things are worth stressing about anymore for me. And I also do some part-time work for a company that sells natural footwear. I think unnatural shoes, which is what 99% of people are wearing, is like one of the gnarliest fiat scams, where people just get their feet destroyed. They experience foot pain. They get their knees and low backs and hips destroyed. And a lot of it, a big contributing factor to just shitty movement and breaking down upstream, is you wear shoes that just destroy your feet and literally handicap your foundation. So I work for a company that sells natural shoes, which don't destroy your feet.
Name them.
Soul Freedom. Plug.
Soul Where are they located?
So www.soulefreedom.ca. They're located out of Ottawa, and they're basically, they exist to provide natural footwear, footwear that doesn't fuck your feet up, to Canadians, because it's actually really hard to get natural footwear here. Our government loves to tax and create friction to any import imported footwear, even though we don't make footwear domestically in Canada. So it's really just a money grab. But yeah, if you want better shoes, go to soulfreedom.ca, and you know, better feet, better foundation, better movement, better life. So yeah, they basically sell shoes for Bitcoiners as a countermeasure to the fiat footwear world that fucks people up. So yeah.
And last thing I just want to touch on is, it's good to see you're doing content again on YouTube, the Bitcoin Stoa, STOA, if you're looking for it. It's also in the show notes below on YouTube, and we'll add it to the audio as well. It's good to see you're doing content again. What's the plans moving forward with your YouTube channel?
I don't know. I'm taking a ultra low time preference approach with the Stoa. not rushing, just seeing what organic conversations come up, which ones are worth recording. You know, that's a project that I'm going to work on for the rest of my life. If I'm, you know, I strive to have interesting, I want to have as many conversations with interesting Bitcoiners that I can learn from as I can. I figure, you know, with the Stoa, it's really just a place where, you know, if those conversations are happening regardless, why don't I just record them and share them so that other people have the opportunity to learn from the people I'm talking to as well. And then if anyone records content, but they don't want to go through the whole process of doing production and posting it and building an audience, and they just want to make their conversations available, it's a place where anyone, any Bitcoiner, can post anything they want. It's all community funded. So yeah, I'll trickle stuff out through there. And in the meantime, it's a treat to be able to talk to people like yourself, spreading the good word of Satoshi. And yeah, it's a treat coming on here. Thanks for the invite.
I know, I appreciate it. And there's not going to be a shortage of people wanting to come on your show. One last question from the audience. When book or media story? That's from Rand.
TBD. At some point in the future.
I love it. So with that, I want to hand it off to you. Where can people find you? How can people reach out? The whole nine yards. The floor is yours. Talk about whatever you want.
Yeah, Nobody Caribou on Twitter. BitcoinStoa.com is where you go for the content. If you want to support a pickleball pro who's trying to build a career on Bitcoin, it's obiwansatoshi.com is his website, and you can find him on Nostr there. And yeah, other than that, appreciate you, Len. Appreciate what you enjoy do, and wish everyone well. Thanks for listening.
And my friend, thanks for coming on. And for everybody else, take care, PV, and we'll be back on Monday. So with that, adios.